This is Don Cassidy with Delicious Agony Progressive Rock Radio, and I have on the phone with me in France a very good friend of the station and an incredibly talented individual, the great Andy Tillison of The Tangent. Andy, how you doing today? How's that for an intro, Andy?
I'm fine. Another classic Don Delicious opening to an interview designed to completely embarrass me and put me off kilter. Be lost for words for the next half hour. Thank you very much, Don. That's lovely.
You're very welcome. And I actually do mean it. Andy, of course, is kind of the brainchild, the driving force behind The Tangent. And the big news is that the incredible fourth studio album from The Tangent is now going to be available. Actually, this week is the official release date here in the U.S., and it's called Not As Good as the Book. And it's a double CD, and it's an incredibly, incredibly impressive recording, in my opinion. Also, there's a novel that's available in the special edition, but I'm going to let Andy talk about all this, not me. Andy, why don't you just let the listeners know a little bit about kind of where you were at as compared to a place in the queue going towards for the new album, Not As Good As the Book.
Oh, right. Well, okay. Obviously, it follows on from Place in the Queue, as do most albums that come out 2 years later. But yeah, this album is the difficult fourth album for The Tangent. We've had a very, very good response to the band and its music ever since we first came into people's attention with our album, The Music That Died Alone.
Right.
You know, each time we've been wondering, is this the last one, or is this the one where after that everybody will hate us forevermore? but you know, we're now four albums and two live albums and a DVD, and three tours into a career by a band which was only ever going to make one album. So, you know, it's going a little bit better than we originally thought.
Yeah, I guess so, huh? I would say. You guys have officially become a real, real, real band now, huh?
Well, it's been like that for quite a while.
Yeah, I know it has. Yeah. But the early days of The Tangent, I'm sure if you released the first album and now looking these years later, that's a pretty impressive collection you guys have put together.
Oh, well, we're glad people think so, you know. It's been an interesting ride. These past 2 years, of course, have been some of the most dramatic in terms of The Tangent's actual, and particularly my own life, really.
Right.
I think, you know, when I spoke to you about Place in the Queue when that came out in 2006, I was talking to you on the phone, telling you all about it, and I was talking to you from France. And here I am 2 years later talking to you about the new album from France.
Right.
But you wouldn't guess, wouldn't be able to, you know, begin to imagine all the things that have happened in between, that I'm not in the same place in France or with the same people.
Right.
I've been through a sort of, like, general big midlife change.
Right.
All of which has kind of ended happily here in the south of France, but I think that, you know, the album has been a very stressful thing to make. I've been living in various different places, in England and in France, not with really a great deal of, you know, knowledge of where home is.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, I've kind of made this album with The Tangent on the road, as it were. It's kind of like my big road epic.
Okay.
You know, a lot of travelling's been done, and the album's been made in a lot of places. In fact, just looking at one of the songs, The Full Gamut, it's been recorded in, I think, about seven different cities, you know, the different parts of it got contributed to. So, yeah, it's been quite a long process. Of course, it's the first double album the band's made.
Right.
And we've also published a book with it as well.
Right, right.
Not content with all the rest of it. We've published a book to go with it.
Right. It's quite an achievement. I mean, you know, progressive rock in general can be kind of adventurous and all that, and you know, all those adjectives. But this album itself, if you really think about it, double disc, is about, I think, 90 plus minutes of music. And then a book that goes along with it is just, you know, an absolutely incredible package that you put together. Maybe before, just because you mentioned it, before we get too much into the music itself, do you want to talk about the story or the book itself, the music? You tell me what you, because there's so much great stuff to talk about here. You tell me what direction you'd rather speak about first.
Really, the Tangents has always been about kind of giving you, socking it to you with the real progressive rock deal.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Because progressive rock to me was always, and mm-hmm. always has been, a kind of multimedia thing. Right from the days when we used to be buying the big 12-inch vinyls with Roger Dean covers and
right.
On the bus, on the way home, and the train, or wherever, and that kind of exciting first few days of listening to the album and finding new things hidden in the cover, you know, that used to be part of our lives.
Right.
With this album, and with all the previous ones, we've always tried to give something that's really good. And although it's not us that does the artwork for the band, we have a big input into what we actually want it to achieve. On this one, we've got we've used a different artist from the previous three studio albums,
right.
And the previous two live albums. We've used this French guy called Antoine Ettery.
Mm-hmm.
He's a young man, and this is his first commissioned work.
Mm-hmm.
And he works in the kind of French bande dessinée area, which is what you American guys call comic strip. He's really quite a marvelous artist, he's put together something that's really interesting, and we got completely hooked on the idea and developed the whole thing into this story. But it's important to remember that this isn't an album, a concept album, one of those where we base the music on a book or an idea.
Right.
This actually it's a concept book. We based the book on the album.
Right.
Because, in fact, most of the album was recorded by the time I actually started to write the book.
Right.
Which actually began in Jonas Reingold's jacuzzi.
Okay, it's a good place to start it.
Yeah. I got stranded in Sweden without a passport. The passport got sent to the capital of Sweden, which just happened to be 800 miles away.
Okay.
So they had to send it back by post, and it took quite a long time to arrive. So I had very little to do, apart from sitting in the jacuzzi.
Okay.
I just started putting this story together. found myself chuckling a lot and thinking, yeah, this seems to work.
Yeah.
And then, of course, realized that we were going to need a lot more than just a normal CD sleeve to put the record, to put this story together.
Right.
So in the end, we've got this album that's 94 minutes of music, 100 pages of novel, and a lot of drawings and pictures. So it is quite a bundle. And I think that, really, I guess that it's, you know, the modern world has very much become a kind of age of disposability.
Mm-hmm.
People are quite happy to just download something, listen to it, throw it to one side, and say, yep, I like that, or yeah, I don't like that. And on this album, we wanted to, you know, really work hard to make something that the album itself retains its own identity.
Right.
That people think, yes, that album by the Tangent. It's not just a couple of tracks that they might have heard on MySpace or
right.
Just have put on the MP3 player. We wanted to sort of generally sort of make something that was a cohesive object,
right.
make it memorable and valuable.
Right.
You know, we wanted to make it something that people would value and want to own and want to become part of.
Right.
That's a kind of fairly Tangent-like idea, and obviously to some it'll have worked, to some it won't, but I hope it works for you.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, it was an interesting point as you're saying this. I'm thinking too, when the way the culture is today with the downloading, the songs, put them on the MP3 play. Oh, I like this song. I like that song. You know, the days of Close to the Edge, Dark Side of the Moon, you know, having albums, you know, where it's not enough to pull songs out of them. You know what I mean? You have to really listen to the album as a whole.
Yeah.
And really to really appreciate the whole experience. And I think a lot of your works have definitely been that way. And there just seems to be less and less and less of that these days.
It's inevitable. I mean, it's the way fashions move. Comes and goes like the tide. At the beginning of rock and roll, everything was completely focused around the single. The single 45 or 78 of it eventually began. And it wasn't really until the Beatles that people started to become more focused on the album. And with the release of things like Sgt. Pepper and, of course, through Cult of the Crimson King, progressive rock music was really one of the first musical forms to profit from the actual format of the album.
Right.
So the album then sort of held sway for many years, and I suppose really the beginning of once MP3s first started to appear and start to circulate on the net, and our players started to change from being machines that used to take one disc at a time,
right,
now to being able to carry around our entire record collection.
Right.
In a small device, a small box the size of a cigarette packet.
Right.
People's listening habits change, and, you know, obviously, a lot of people choose random play as a way of enjoying their record collection. And, you know, I think there's a part in the book where I actually discuss this idea. You know, and the fact is that nowadays your MP3 player makes a selection of tracks, and sometimes you just press ignore. You don't want to listen to that one, and you flick on to the next.
Right, sure.
How many times do people choose the singing dog track off Metal by... if you're going to listen to something off Metal nowadays, it's either going to be Echoes, Fearless, or one of these.
Well, don't talk badly about Seamus. That song has some validity to it, doesn't it? Isn't that what's called Seamus?
Yes, but it's great. It's
excellent.
It is excellent.
With David Gilmour and the dog. Oh, it's excellent.
It's only excellent if you listen to it within Metal.
Mm-hmm.
You need to listen to Metal from the beginning to the end.
Right.
Singing dog track.
Right.
So, this is the whole point, that because listening habits have changed, the option for what people sometimes call filler has seriously fallen by the wayside. And, there are songs which are called filler, but people refer to filler as something bad. I mean, there's been some fantastic filler tracks, you know, stuff by bands where they've just completely gone off the wall and had a, you know, ridiculous idea and decided to exploit it. And
right.
Seamus by the Floyd, obviously.
Yeah, I probably would meet that category. I would meet that, I would say.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Clap by Yes, you know, suddenly a bit of ragtime guitar in the middle of an otherwise totally amazing progressive rock album by Yes, you know.
Right.
Is another case of something that goes completely off the wall. But somehow, if you're listening to your MP3 player and it's just played a track by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, it suddenly goes into the Clap by Steve Howe, it just doesn't have the same resonance. The Clap sounds great as long as it's in between Yours Is No Disgrace and Starship Troopers.
Right.
That's where it belongs. And, you know, so we do a kind of similar thing. I mean, the Tangent has done this idea before. You know, we did a disco track on the previous album.
Yep.
We have an album, we have a track like that on this album. We have a sort of like daft song about a motorcyclist.
Yes.
Which is called Bat Out of Basildon.
Right.
And, these are sort of, you know, the little things, the little ideas that tend to get missed nowadays because of the MP3 player. So, you know, I think that, I guess what the Tangent tries to do, and the Flower Kings will obviously try to do themselves, and many other progressive bands, is to actually still produce an album that begs people to actually put the bloody thing on.
Right.
And
right.
listen to it from right. the beginning until
right.
the end.
Right.
You know, and I'm afraid, yeah, we're getting a bit more old-fashioned and long in the tooth in that respect, but it's still an important thing.
Absolutely. Okay, I guess we'll focus a little bit on the music. It's a tremendous amount of music. We can't talk about it all. We'll be here all day. But again, it's 90-plus minutes, like Andy said, and it's two discs. And I guess a little, you know, the album kicks off with a song that's entitled A Crisis in Midlife. Which is a great intro piece to the album. But does it kind of also reflect, I guess you've already kind of said it a little bit, kind of maybe where your head was when you were writing this this particular album, at the you know, when you started putting these songs together?
Yeah, I mean, basically, that song was the first song we wrote for the album.
Right.
And that was written before Place in the Queue got released.
Okay.
So, you know, it's quite a long time ago, is that? But yeah, things started to change in my life towards the end of 2006. Myself and my partner Sam were going through some rough times together, and you know, I began to worry about the future and generally become unstable and uncertain about where my life was going.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, I started to write songs that were, you know, reflective of that kind of emotion. And that was the first one to come out. And I think that I then decided that there was quite an interesting sort of amount of subject matter there, because rock music itself usually tends to cater for younger audiences. A lot of the lyrics tend to be centered around problems that younger people feel and trials and tribulations that younger people have to go through. And I felt that, well, you know, rock music itself is in middle age now. It's over 50 years old.
Right.
A bit long in the tooth. And there's absolutely no reason why rock music shouldn't be addressing adult problems. And consequently, I decided to write a few songs like that. And of course, not wanting to make them depressing, sometimes I approach them from a rather humorous way.
Right.
And sometimes from a, you know, rather sarcastic and ironic way.
Right.
I think that first song, Crisis in Midlife, is it's just a song about being uncertain. It's about looking ahead in the future, and you find, I think the metaphor I use is that I find myself on a bridge, crossing a bridge, a very large bridge, and you're now suspended miles above a chasm, and it's a hell of a long way back to where you set off from.
Right.
It's a hell of a long way to where you're going, but you can't even tell where you're going.
Right.
So, you know, and you can feel the bridge swaying in the wind.
Right.
It's quite a, you know, a feeling of trepidation. I felt it on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and I feel it now in my life. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of people there who will have similar emotions, and I think it's high time that those people who feel that kind of thing have some songs that deal with it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And, I mean, let's face it, I mean, although there are younger people that do obviously find this music, you know, I don't think the core audience of the Tangent or the Flower Kings or most of these bands are, you know, 16-year-old kids. You know, there are definitely some, though, a lot more than I thought there would be some days when I see them. But the bottom line is that I think the majority of these fans are people that have come through progressive rock in some form or fashion, a lot of them through the 70s, and really missed how good it was. And it's like me, although I'm a little younger than a lot of folks, I kind of caught it on later on, you know, that heard bands like the Flower Kings and Spock's Beer when I first heard them, and you guys, like, wow, you know, this music can still be made in a fresh, new way now, and it's got the same feeling of the old great music. Isn't that great? I think that's the majority of the folks that listen. I would hope so. But I think there are some new people getting in there, too, so there is there's a cross battery. So we can't forget about the midlife folks.
It is absolutely true. And in fact, I was asked a similar question in Paris the other week. An interviewer was asking me if he felt that I was ignoring the younger people by writing about middle-aged people.
Right.
So I said the only thing you can be sure is that everybody who's young is going to be middle-aged
right.
soon.
At some point, they'll get there.
They'll soon get there.
Hopefully.
There for them then.
Right.
So nobody gets left out
right.
by writing a song for the older person.
Right.
And I still think that the music has a vitality, and, you know, somebody will, you know, be able to profit from it, no matter what age they are, you know. And of course, I would love to play to younger people.
Of course.
And the more the merrier, you know. But in the end, you know, I'm not looking for people of a certain age to play to. I'm just looking for people of a certain mind.
Right.
And I don't care how old they are, what sex they are, what color they are,
right,
or anything. It's just, you know, as long as they can find something and get something out of the music,
right,
that's a great thing.
Absolutely. Again, we're not going to be able to talk about every song, so we'll be here all day. But another song, just quickly, is Lost in London, which originally appeared on Place in the Queue, right? Lost in London was on the first Lost in London. This is Lost in London 25 years later.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, so what's happened 25 years later as we're still lost in London? we were lost 25 years ago, and we're still a little foggy in London 25 years later.
Right, well, I it's just two separate, completely different episodes.
Right.
As you know, I've never lived in London.
Right.
I'm north of England, and I don't know London very well. The first chapter on Place in the Queue was about a young man, a young version of me, going to try to get a record.
Right, to record, record executives. Right.
25 years later is just myself and Ian, my friend Ian, who manages the band.
Ian Oakley, a great, for those who don't know, a great, great, great guy and a good friend of the station. But go ahead. Little plug for Ian.
We went to London one evening. We went to see Krista Johnson playing in his jazz band.
Right.
We couldn't get into the nightclub, and we just never worked out why. They just wouldn't let us. And we just felt it was probably because we were too old or something. We just had no idea why they wouldn't let us in. We were just totally surrounded by all these young people in the middle of London, and we just had no idea what to do, so we went and got a burger.
Okay.
And we were just sitting there having a burger, and for some reason, as the song says, we just started talking about sex.
Yes.
Now, the great thing about this is that, you know, this is me and Ian, we're both nearly 50 years old.
Okay.
And there we are talking about sex. And we've known each other for a really long time. And we've never talked about sex before. We've talked about Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Now we've done Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Sure.
And science fiction we've talked about. And can you hear this frog?
Is that what that is? I hear something.
It's a frog, yes.
Andy's going to sample it for the next Tangent album, so look for it.
It's a bloody noise.
If you hear a frog starting at the beginning of one of the Tangent songs, that's what it is.
Right, yeah. So, you know, it was just one of those magical evenings, and just after we'd done had this conversation about sex, we ended up in just going out into the London air, and we were in Soho, and this guy comes up to me and he says, "Are you looking for someone?" We're looking for Krista Johnson, and then realised that we'd actually asked this pimp if he knew where Krista Johnson was.
Right, right.
And, of course, all we did was laugh for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, I bet.
It was just one of those bizarre moments.
Right.
And, there was something very nice about that, you know, discovering a little bit more about each other.
Right.
We found more out about what we were like when we were young from each other. And it was just a lovely evening. So, you know, somehow or other, just ended up becoming a song.
And it made a great song. Andy, talk a little bit. I know you mentioned Krista Johnson. Maybe we'll talk about him a little bit later because he is returning to the fold, I noticed, on some tour dates coming up. We could talk about that. But sticking with the album, obviously the musicians involved, a lot of the folks that the Tangent fans know, like Guy Manning and Theo Travis, who's fantastic. Jaime Salazar on the drums. Jonas Reingold, who's always been on the bass for the Tangent. But you have a new guitarist on the album, correct?
Yeah, we worked with a guy called Jacko Jackseek.
Yeah, I always call him Jacko. I don't even try the last name.
Yeah, Jacko is the actual official name he uses anyway. So Jacko is he's been around for quite a while. he's played with some of the best. He's actually been in one of Dave Stewart's bands.
Right.
Dave Stewart from National Health.
Yep.
Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics. He was in one of those bands.
There's a difference between those two guys? I didn't realize. I figured, you know, Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics and Dave Stewart from National Health, I thought they were kind of similar. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. I'm sorry.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, just a little.
So, there we go. And he's most recently came to prominence in the world of progressive music, at least, with the 21st Century Skids. So I'm going to have to go somewhere else from this frog.
Well, he's not coming out too bad. I can hear you loud and clear, but you might not be able to focus with him yapping like that.
Yeah. 21st Century Skidside Band, which is, of course, the reformed version of King Crimson.
Right.
it wasn't a tribute band. It was actually King Crimson without Robert Fripp.
Right.
Or Greg Lake. It was the original guys who made the Court of the Crimson King.
Right.
You know, and Mike Giles and all those people mm-hmm. got back and made and did a tour. And they used Jacko to play the part of Robert Fripp and Greg Lake.
I would guess not an easy task.
Well, being Greg Lake and Rob Fripp at the same time.
Yeah, no, I would think that would not be an easy task.
Yeah, well, it probably isn't an easy task for most people, but Jacko seemed to pull it off brilliantly.
Yeah.
If you've ever heard their concert.
Unbelievable.
It is remarkable. Really good disc, and if the station doesn't have a copy, it ought to get one.
Yeah, I think we do. I have heard the stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very good, very good. And anyway, I'd been in touch with him earlier. In fact, we approached him originally to do the guitar for Place in the Queue, but at the time he was unavailable. So this time round, with me coming to England, Sam had left the group, and I was kind of hoping to work with somebody else English. So I asked Jacko if he'd do it, and Jacko said yes this time, and we had a great time making it. But, you know, I said on the website at the time, you know, that the Tangent's not the kind of band. We don't sack people.
Right.
We don't, it's not that kind of story, really.
Right.
The Tangent's a very open-minded, fluid project.
Right.
Just because we didn't use Krista on that last album doesn't mean that Krista's out of the band forever or anything. It just means that he didn't play on that album.
Right.
So, yeah, we're doing a tour this year. And Krista will be doing the tour with us. And Jacko played on the album. So it's just a part of the fluidity of the group. Jacko played an amazing role on the record, I think. He became a new lead voice for the band on a couple of moments of the album,
mm-hmm.
Two songs in particular. And he brought, you know, yet another new guitar style and something new to the pot. And perhaps, you know, if there is something that we have, it's the fact that not every album is the same, and it's possibly because we introduce other people's ideas.
Right.
Not just the same every time.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Now, inevitably, as we listen to this album, the prog rock fans are always going to gravitate towards the epic tracks. And that's just the way it is. And we have all this great music on this one and parts of, you know, and then we get into the last two tracks of the album, which are called Four Egos, One War.
Yep.
And living in the U.S., there's a lot of egos involved in this war, and that I think of every day. And The Full Gamut are the two tracks, and two 20-minute epic tracks on disc two of the album. They're both fantastic and very, you know, obviously adventurous songs. Do you want to talk a little bit about Four Egos, One War? Because that song interests me a lot.
Really, yeah. Four Egos was constructed some time ago, during the time of shock and awe, the period where Baghdad was under siege.
Yeah.
And really, you know, I sat at home one evening watching the bombs fall on Baghdad whilst I was eating my tea at home.
Yeah.
Of course, it happened at a different time of day than it did in America.
Right.
And of course, happened at a different time than it happened in Baghdad. But it just happened that it was going out live whilst I was eating my dinner, my tea. You know, we call the evening meal tea.
Yeah, yeah.
So there I was having my meal, and we were busy bombing a city.
Yeah.
And the pictures were coming through live.
Right.
I just kind of, you know, I don't want to argue about the political rights and wrongs of whatever happened in Iraq, but there just seemed something terribly wrong with this situation to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked around me, and I didn't see much coming out of either America or Britain in protest. And I have to look back at the Vietnam War and the other conflicts back in the 1960s and how so many of the great musicians that America produced and Canada and Britain had such a vocal presence during the time of those conflicts. Like people like Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan,
sure.
Jimi Hendrix, Jim
sure.
Morris. And,
sure.
And how very much, you know, those songs of protest became kind of like a soundtrack to the times.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking around and thinking, where are the protests on?
Right.
You know, somebody's busy dropping bombs on Iraq.
Right.
I'm eating my tea and nobody's singing about
it. Right. Somebody go get Joan Baez. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, well, I have to do this. And then at the same time, I suddenly sort of stopped in my tracks and thought, this is a really egotistical thing to be thinking that I should be writing a song about it. And then I thought to myself, well, it is all just a matter of egos. And this is where, of course, the song began to take shape.
Yeah.
And that I took various different egos that it takes to actually put a war together, as it like. And
yeah.
The egos that I came up with is that, first of all, is our ego. That's the whole of us on the planet and how we sometimes like to see. We'd like to think of wars as being something that we get through, we survive, we manage to rebuild our cities, we manage to reconstruct society and learn from war. And that's just an egotistical point of view, you know, because it doesn't really fulfill anything.
No, it doesn't.
We have this warm feeling afterwards as we're sort of celebrating or remembering the dead or whatever.
Yeah.
We feel good about it.
Yeah.
In afterwards. And that's, you know, that's one ego. And then the second ego was the ego of the media, you know, the entrenched reporter, the embedded reporter, as they were saying, and the people, you know, all too keen to show us the picture of the rocket flying down a chimney or going in through a window and surgically removing some kind of military headquarters, the technology that goes with it, and that kind of general egotistical reporting of kind of Fox News, Sky News, BBC News, doesn't matter who.
Right.
Then the next ego was the ego of the politician who just didn't know whether to say yes or to say no to the war, or, you know, and how much popularity he would feel in his country, and, you know, by deciding to support or not support a war. And then, of course, the fourth ego was my ego, for being the man who sort of thought, well, I can profit out of this by writing. And so I suppose it's kind of a little bit honest, a little bit, you know, it's all flaky. But I think that, you know, the modern world, that's all you can be. You can look on it, and no matter what your stance on it is, it's a difficult position to take.
Right. Right.
I just wondered where all the other songs were. And really, so that really the four egos, one war is just this kind of asking who's to blame, really. You know, also blaming myself or any of us, really, for what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's a good point you bring up. Where are the songs? You know, it's... I don't know. I mean, I live in this country, America, and I'm not going to talk bad about the country, but it just seems like people, whatever is thrown in front of them to some degree, do seem to go along with it these days, you know. And, you know, we've been over there now for 6 years, whatever it's been. And, you know, 25% of the United States still think that the war's okay. And it's just very, very, very strange. And there's not even the people who are on the more progressive type of thinking towards this thing really haven't, you know, there's no songs. There's really not, there's nowhere near the, I don't know, because there's not a draft or what it is, but it's not the anywhere near the amount of anti war feelings that you think there would be. It's been 5 or 6 years now, and a lot of people have died, and it just seems like it just keeps going on every day. It's very, very strange over here. Very strange.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't doubt that, you know, there are people who, you know, I mean, whether it's right wing or left wing or whatever, yeah, the thing is that there is room for comment at all times, I think. And I guess that when I view America, you know, I mean, I have very warm feelings towards America.
You do? Good for you. Sometimes I don't. So that's a good thing. I have trouble with that sometimes.
You know, I was only saying today, because as a matter of fact, here in France today, they were having a program about music that was released in 1968. During the time of the student uprisings, and
no.
Of course the demonstrations against Vietnam and all that kind of stuff. And they were playing quite a lot of the French music that had been recorded at the time. And they also played some of the American stuff, you know. And, you know, I mean, at that time, forgive me for saying, I think the Americans made the best music in the world.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no doubt about it. 1968, you know, I would have chosen to be in America rather than anywhere else in the world just to be part of that musical revolution.
Sure.
And, you know, it's one of the things that impresses me so much about your country is the art that came out as a result of the conflict. And I remember finding myself getting into trouble on a mail list somewhere in America, saying Andy Tillotson shouldn't be writing songs about politics. Prog should be about music, not about politics. You know, and I kind of wondered what made them think that.
Right.
You know, whether somebody would have told Joni Mitchell, don't sing about politics.
Right, right.
It's you guys who invented the protest song.
Right, right.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. I'm as sorry, folks, just flipped the tape. You're right. You're absolutely right. We were just talking about politics. And, you know, it never offends me one way or the other, because I think musicians who write music, it's going to reflect really what they feel and what they think. How can it, unless you're a computer, right? I mean, I'm not a musician, but if I was writing music and writing songs that meant a lot to me, how could you not have, you know, yourself and what you believe in, your core, in what you write? It doesn't make any sense. You know, like I said, unless you're a computer and you're just doing it without any feeling involved, but I would think that most of the great musicians did not do that.
I mean, yeah, I think it's, I don't know if it's a case of, you know, people just feel that progressive rock music should be left, you know, should be kept out of politics, but, you know, even, I mean, like Neil Morse's, Neil Morse's work is certainly political in the religious sense, and you can even go back and see the kind of, the pretext for this in Kansas's work, because, you know, they sort of like did quite a few things about the American Indian situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's not unknown. And, you know, I never make myself out to be some kind of political genius. I don't really make myself out as being somebody who's providing answers. I don't, you know, I'm not there waving banners. I'm just asking questions in the songs, really.
Right.
And, you know, and just hoping that somebody else can find the answers, because,
right,
you know, I ain't no genius at all when it comes to that kind of thing.
Right.
I feel that somewhere along the line, people have forgotten to sing about what's happening in the world, and I think that's a very sad thing.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more, and it's one of the things that I've noticed, that what I've always, as much as I love your music personally, and I almost see you, as I've said this before, as a troubadour from modern progressive rock, in that you keep the feeling of the 70s music, the feeling that you got when you listen to Yes and King Crimson and Emerson, Lincoln Palmer and Pink Floyd and all that great stuff, but you put your feelings into it and you modernize it in a way that, you know, it's distinctly Andy Tillotson and the Tangent, and your feelings come through in the music, and you keep that. It's a feeling I can't really describe, but I listen to your music, I feel the same as when I listened with the 70s stuff. It's just a feeling of, I can't even describe what it is. It's just a feeling, you know what I mean? It's hard to even put into words what it is, and that's why I've considered you almost like the modern troubadour of progressive rock.
Well, it's very kind of you to say.
Is that embarrassing enough for you? Well, I think I've said it before. I do. I really do. I mean, Roy is there too, but I always feel like that you really kind of even go take another step almost in some ways, put yourself out there even more than Roy does, and in that way, it's really wonderful.
I think that Roy actually is. I mean, I think Roy has a problem, and Roy's problem is the fact that, you know, he's chosen to write his music in English,
mm-hmm,
and his lyrics in English.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I think his lyrics are really damn good.
Yeah, sure.
I appreciate his lyrics a great deal. You know, when I look at it and think, wow, he's done that in his second language.
It's incredible.
An amazing thing to be able to do. And sometimes he really can put his finger just on the point. Sometimes sometimes he does it in all sort of like naive innocence, which is all the more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Just the stuff with, you know, the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way he puts that song together, I mean, of course, the truth will set you free is a well-used phrase.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics within that song, you know, still put their finger on a pulse somewhere, despite being written in a language that's not his own. So I really appreciate that.
That's fascinating. Yeah, you're right. And I've been listening to the Flower Kings for a long time, and I don't even think of that much at the point. Well, wow, this is Roina's second language. And I remember I asked him about that once, and he said he feels that I don't know what his reasoning was. It wasn't just that for listening purposes. He feels that the Swedish language per se it just doesn't fit to what he wants to do as much. It was some kind of rationale like that. But also because people, I think, you know, want to hear English. You know, I'm sure that's part of the reason too. It's hard for me. It always has been. To listen to music as good as it is when I don't understand what the singer is saying because I don't understand the language.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy listening to music in all different languages.
Yeah, because I think of it as almost another instrument.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I do like some every once in a while. I like to say, "Wow, what's that person really saying?"
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? It's like another vocals in another language are like another instrument to me.
Yeah.
Even though I have no idea what exactly they're saying.
Yeah, at the same time as you say that, I would far rather listen to PFM singing Italian than when they sing in English.
Well, because it sounds terrible.
Because their Italian is just magnificent.
Right.
I've got no idea what the songs are about.
Right. Well, the problem with PFM, that's a good example, is that they're phonetically singing in English, but they don't even speak English. So they're translating it as they're singing it, but they have no idea what the English even means, and it sounds terrible. You know, I mean, so because they really never spoke English. That was the way they redid those albums back there. So they should have just kept those in Italian, I agree.
Yeah.
That definitely did not work.
The dubbed film is a PFM in English, I think, so I always prefer to listen to them in there.
I would agree with you. Anyway, so we have this incredible album, double disc, coming out this week. It's very exciting. We talked a little bit, briefly, about, and you've been very kind with your time as always, you and the Frog, quite a good tag team over in France. The Frog might be making a debut on a new Tangent album in the future. We're not sure about that yet. We're going to look into it, though. on background vocals, Andy's Frog in France.
Yeah.
An Inside Out tour is going to take place in May with the Tangent. You got some great bands on this. The Tangent, Ritual is a fantastic band, and Beardfish also, which is a really, really good band, are going to be doing some dates starting in May, and it's going to be the four-piece of the Tangent, correct, Andy?
That's right, four-piece lineup. It's as I say, a smaller lineup of the band than has gone out before. But as I explained somewhere on the website, I think that it's to do with, with the Tangent being a band made up of people who are also in other groups, we can either wait forever and ever and ever until everybody happens to be free on one week.
Right.
Or we can actually say, we'll tour. The point is that we haven't actually toured now for coming up for 2 years.
Right.
Because of the fact that we simply haven't been able to get everybody together. And at some point, we just drew the line and said, okay, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to go and play. And this will have to be the lineup. So I think that everybody has come to know that the Tangent is a flexible, fluid lineup band. And, we will obviously give what we can. So a four-piece lineup shouldn't be a problem. It'll be interesting to hear how some of the other instruments get interpreted by another instrument, for example. So obviously there's not going to be a saxophone player on this tour. It's going to be guitar, keyboards, drums and bass. But really, guitar and keyboards, drums and bass is the basis of the Tangent. That's what we're based around. So, other instruments will take the saxophone lines and wind lines, and we'll get by. It will be good. And it'll be exciting. And it'll be rock and roll this time. You know, we're going to be much more of a rock and roll band. So I'm hoping that people will get off on that in that case.
Absolutely. And I wish I was in Europe to check it out. You can go to the Tangent website at www.thetangent.org. You can get lost on that website for hours, by the way. I've always said that's a really, really cool website. So much good stuff on it. And it has the dates and the bands. And I love these drawings that are appearing of you guys now all over the place. It's really kind of cool. Now, is this the new artist that you've been working with?
Yeah, I mean, for the whole of the new album, we decided not to have any photographs of the group at all. desperate, in fact, to hand over everything to this new artist. He's only 22 years old.
That's unbelievable.
And just let him do everything. And he did all the artwork. He drew all the drawings of the band, and he's put everything together. So we found that very exciting, and then found out that the other two bands that we're touring with, Ritual and Beardfish, also used drawings for their front. It was kind of good because we've been able to compile this.
It all fits.
Compile this sort of big image together of their drawings with our drawings.
Yeah. Yeah, the tour poster's great. So it's got Beardfish, Ritual, and the Tangent Touring Quartet, and it's on the Tangent website, and it's fantastic. And it's being Inside Out Music, an evening with three of today's most imaginative and individual bands. Don't expect the same as usual. And for those folks who don't know Ritual, Ritual's fantastic. Patrick Lundstrom, also of Kuiper on vocals, and Beardfish is a great band, too, from Sweden. So that's a great triple bill that they put together.
It's a nice bill. I mean, I'm really pleased. I mean, I've been a Ritual fan for yonks. I was really into Ritual back in Parallel 90 Degrees.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
We went out and supported them in Yorkshire, in England. It was really great. So I really liked their music. I must say, I'm absolutely bloody terrified because, I mean, you know, I've always said that I am a kind of acquired taste when it comes to singing. I'm not really a great singer. I've got a character voice rather than a great singing voice. But I mean, Patrick's just the best singer.
Yeah, he's got powerful pipes, no doubt about it.
He's got a fantastic voice. And having to share a stage with him is a little bit daunting, I must say. But we'll get by. And I think the audience they're used to me by now. They know what to expect.
I think so, too. Anyway, Andy's been very kind with his time, as always. We could talk I love speaking to you. I feel like we could talk for hours. But the album is not as good as the book. The American release actually is, I think, officially this Tuesday here in the U.S. You can order it right now from the website or get it at any of the Prague retailers in the U.S. obviously are going to have it. I would highly recommend the special edition because you get the book. And it looks really, really fantastic. And I mean, is there anything else you want to say to the fans before we go about Not As Good As The Book?
Well, just that I hope everybody enjoys it, and I hope that we get enough support to go back and make you something else in a couple of years' time, you know. But right now, this is what we've been doing for the past 2 years. It's been a very important part of my life. And I just hope that it means something to somebody. So thank you for listening.
Absolutely. It means a lot to us. And I know Andy, like you mentioned before, he had some kind of a little ups and downs recently, and sounds like things are really going well for you now. And you've been a good friend to us and to me, and I want to wish you all the best in the future. As always, be in touch. And one of these days we'll actually meet you, I think, hopefully, over here in the States.
Okay. Thanks very much, Don.
Thanks, Andy. Be well.
Be well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.